When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Alexis, codenamed Doc Holliday Jackson. Most importantly, you are you. You are here. That makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. It's the top of the week as we hurtle headlong toward the end of February. Our summer plans are ruined. North Korea has closed down their Airbnbs.
Dang.
Yeah, that's something we all took. We all took an L on that one. there are so many things occurring around the world today. We're going to explore several of them. We're going to explore a lawyer who saved the day. A new cryptid just dropped. And before we do any of that, we were thinking we might travel to Chernobyl.
Oh, why not? Maybe they have Airbnbs available there, perhaps. I don't know. It's the next thing. Let's start getting some tourist traffic over there at Chernobyl. No, not so much for humans, but for wildlife. As we've talked about numerous times on the show, it's a flourishing but very diverse ecosystem with numerous species of insects, plants, fauna, megafauna, stuff that could, be considered almost approaching cryptids, especially when we start to talk about some of the ways that the radiation, that's the legacy radiation from that Chernobyl exclusion zone has affected some of these creatures. Today, we are specifically talking about the wolf population there and how exposure, long-term generational exposure, after all, the Chernobyl catastrophe, where one of the reactors there near Pripyat, Ukraine, exploded. More than 200,000 people were evacuated and created these exclusion zones. That was back in 1986. So we are at a place now where we're actually starting to kind of see almost evolutionary results from the exposure that these creatures have had to this this legacy radiation. Specifically today, we're looking at a study that has come out from a researcher by the name there's a couple of researchers we're talking about today. One is by the name of Shane Campbell Statton, who is a fellow at the Princeton Evolutionary Biology Labs, I suppose you could call it. There is also another fellow researcher by the name of Kara N. Love, and they have been studying the effects of the radiation in this exclusion zone or these exclusion zones on the wolf population. And one thing that has come out very recently, I believe in the last couple of weeks, is the idea that wolves, the wolf population in Belarus's exclusion zone, have started to develop parts of their genome that are resistant to cancer. Good news, because this is the kind of thing that can be studied and can potentially be harnessed and used, you know, in cancer research for humans. Really fascinating stuff. There's a really great NPR interview where Love and their fellow Princeton evolutionary biologist Shane Campbell Statton, they gave to NPR, where they talk about this research. Campbell Statton said in the interview that the exclusion zones are, quote, home to everything from amphibians, insects, and birds to megafauna. So things like European bison, boar, apex predators like wolves, gray wolves in particular, they say, offer a really interesting opportunity to understand the impacts of chronic, low-dose, multi-generational exposure to ionizing radiation because of the role that they play in their ecosystem. Going on to quote, there may be genetic variation within the wolf population that may allow some individuals to be more resistant or resilient in the face of that radiation, in which case they may still get cancer at the same rate, but it may not impact their function as much as it would an individual outside of the exclusion zone. They're just able to take that burden better for some reason, or it could be resistance. And despite that pressure, that radiation exposure, they just don't get cancer as much.
Yeah, it's interesting too. Dr. Love's study focuses on wolf blood, I think, and it descends from earlier studies on different fauna in the exclusion zone. And I love that you're pointing out the earlier work we did on on the damage that human beings or human populations pose to wild animals. It wasn't too long ago, Noel, that some study found that humans were more dangerous to animals in Chernobyl than the radiation. Is that correct?
I think that's right. I don't have that exact data in front of me, but what is interesting is the lack of humans in these exclusion zones, which is largely what's allowed these populations of wildlife and flora to flourish kind of untouched. And it also offers a really unique research opportunity to, you know, take a look at how these species are developing. Because again, we're looking at decades of data now. So you could consider this, as the researchers do, multi-generational exposure to this low level radiation. They're seeing the report says that they're seeing very similar kind of resistance that you might see in a cancer patient undergoing radiation therapy. Which makes sense because radiation therapy, chemo treatments and stuff is exposure to low level radiation. That obviously it does make people quite sick, but long term it can cause the body to reject the cancer cells, to kind of evolve in its own way as a result of being exposed to that. I mean, I guess maybe evolve is the wrong word because that's a much shorter timeline, you know, that these individuals undergoing that kind of treatment are exposed to the stuff. This is like the kind of thing where we're seeing natural selection at play, where the wolves that remain are the ones that have that adaptation that allows them to be, much more resilient to cancer and tumor growth.
That's so weird. Like resilient to cancer, and yet you're still being irradiated. Mm-hmm. What are the other big problems that come with radiation? I thought cancer was one of the big things that radiation could cause, and just destruction of cells.
Sterility would be one.
Right.
Sterility would be one. There's the possibility to also limit reproduction through tumors that interfere with the natural lifespan of the creature. To your point, Noel, I believe, check me on this, folks, but I believe a gray wolf has a relatively short lifespan in comparison to other large fauna. So if there's a reproductive advantage to surviving the exposure of radiation in Chernobyl, then it does make sense that they could breed for that trait. I think they're living there, the wolves, with something like 6+ times the safe amount of radiation for a life form. And so if they are if they are surviving, what we have to remember is there's probably a pretty high rate of attrition. There are probably a lot of pups in a litter that aren't making it to reproductive age.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's I think that's where we're able. And again, no evolutionary biology background here. Just going, you know, from what the experts are saying, and I hope that we're interpreting it correctly. I think between the three of us, we are. But that's where you start to see that natural selection at play. Like the individuals that are born that have that trait, they're the ones that survive longer. Because to your point, Ben, you know, about the impact of humans, one of the researchers had this to say, Campbell Statton. That a wolf living within that Chernobyl exclusion zone might have to deal with these potential pressures from cancer, but it doesn't have to deal with pressures from, say, hunting, for example. Mm. And I'm just going to go on and read the quote because they say it better than I could paraphrase. And it may be that the release from that hunting pressure, that separation from humans, turns out to be a much better thing than having to deal with cancer, which is kind of messed up. That's part of the quote, but I completely concur with that.
It's true, though. Look at the biodiversity in the DMZ. Look at the way the natural world quickly recovered a bit of its population when humans were locked down during COVID, right? If you take the human species out of the equation, then Earth grows back pretty quickly. Also, didn't we talk about the wild boars?
Yeah.
That were running around Chernobyl.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, obviously the wild boars are known for digging for, you know, truffles and such. Maybe there's specific ones that are good at digging for truffles, but they do root. And a lot of times the soil content, you know, deeper down does have, you know, higher levels of radiation. So that was why we were seeing higher instances of irradiated boars, you know, from that same Chernobyl exclusion zone. Like I was saying earlier, there are implications on human health care, you know, in this. Campbell Statton said, by the way, the interview on NPR was on a show called Shortwave. And so you can probably just Google the name of the researchers in Shortwave and find the entire transcription or probably even the audio. NPR is pretty good about that. But it says Campbell Statton told the interviewer that they are starting to collaborate with cancer biologists and cancer medication and treatment companies to help interpret all of this data and, to quote them, try to figure out if there are any directly translatable differences that may offer novel therapeutic targets for cancer in humans, for instance. And one interesting thing about this, too, is the pandemic and also the fact that this area is, in fact, not safe for humans has caused this research to be a little on the slow going side.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's kind of a bummer because they probably could have been a little further along than they are. Because of these conditions, they're having to kind of take it a little bit slow and steady.
It's cool stuff, though. Even if the research is stymied, it just shows us yet again the natural world is astonishing. You know, I wonder too, this makes me think, I wonder if it were possible, if there were a world wherein we could find an area with a high diversity of natural flora and fauna, and then just kick all the humans out. Like, don't even national park it. Don't have visitors. Just say no humans can go here for a century and see what happens.
Well, that's really interesting that you say that, Ben, especially since we recently did an episode on national parks and just like the whole, I mean, I know you'd mentioned that just now, but there is a conceptual kind of similarity there, because if it weren't for people going to bat for the need for national parks and to have these areas be protected, commerce and, you know, just the need to develop every possible inch of land would have just inevitably bulldozed those places. So it requires that kind of forward thinking, you know, to really have that kind of flexibility to have these places protected. And I think you could apply that to areas of research if there was potential for real long-term studies that could, you know, benefit humanity. I also wanted to mention, too, I mentioned the pandemic and also just the general danger of this place to humans. But let's not forget Russia's invasion of Ukraine. That's a big, you know, issue in this area. So it is, again, another human intervention that has led to it being difficult to continue this research as quickly as it might be good to do.
Banger interview from the Swanson era, though, huh? Did you guys watch that?
Oh, no, I don't think so.
Tucker Carlson went full
for the Swan Snare. That's a gotcha. Yeah,
went full foreign asset and had one of the most like Tim Heidecker level interviews with a dictator. And it's just a masterclass in how not to do interviews.
And bootlicking, I'm sure.
Wait, he interviewed Putin?
Yeah, he interviewed Putin. It's a okay. Well, the pronunciation may be in dispute, but
dispute and Putin.
Yeah, but he so in the interview, Tucker Carlson, the famous Swanson heir, is asking questions directly. And you know, it's quite rare for Putin to have those direct one-to-one interviews.
He'll only do it with friendlies, you know, folks that he believes are gonna be in his corner to some degree. I mean, right?
I gotta tell you, he still has some old spooky moves. Like he does some old KGB stuff where it's like you slide in personal details. Mm. And he mentions the time Tucker Carlson attempted to apply to the CIA and got rejected.
Just as like
a sneak diss.
Little subtweet there. Yeah. Speaking of which, isn't he still doing his show on X, FKA Twitter? Is that still happening?
I imagine so.
Because remember how it was like, not to sideline, I think we're pretty much done with the story here, but the viewing numbers for Tucker Carlson's show on Twitter or on X were like overly wildly inflated because of what X counts as a view. There's a discrepancy between a view and an impression where they can say Tucker Carlson's getting 100 gazillion trillion views, but it's just because they're embedding it on like everybody's timeline. So if someone just scrolls past it and it autoplays, that counts as a view. So they're like wildly inflated numbers. Cause you know, based on that, they're saying that his numbers are higher than the most recent Super Bowl, which apparently was the largest viewing numbers, in network television history. I want to say, go Taylor Swift, right?
That was crazy. Usher is so good at concerts. Did you notice he had a football game before and after his concert? It was wild.
What do you mean? I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm a dumb dumb.
Was it any good?
What's that?
Was it any good?
It was pretty good. It was roller skating. It was a 2000s smorgasbord, you know, of all the hits. I believe we had a lot of the ATL favorites, like Ludacris made an appearance.
Yeah.
Alicia Keys isn't really Atlanta, but she's part of that kind of 2000s scene. Yeah, no, I think he represented. I thought it was good.
Jermaine Dupri shouted out one of my favorite commercials of all time. He had his Berries and Cream cosplay on.
Oh, dude, I love Berries and Cream.
Are you kidding?
I'm the little lad.
I am not kidding you.
Oh, my God.
Was it a real reference, or was it just similarities that you could not ignore?
I might just be seeing patterns where none exist.
Berries and Cream, Berries and Cream. I'm a little lad who loves Berries and Cream.
Yeah, that's a great commercial, by the way.
Boy, is it.
Some of the best work Starburst and has ever done. It inspired an episode of 13 Days of Halloween. Noel, I wonder to sew it up. What do you see as the future here for the Wild Wolves of Chernobyl? Do you see it as informing cancer research for humans? How long do you think these wolves have before humans encroach again upon their territory?
Well, I don't know. It's a good question. Again, there is sort of a built-in, like, you can't really go there. And it's like land that nobody wants, right? Like that other episode that we did recently. Like Chernobyl, there, I think because of its irradiatedness, it has to be looked at differently than other land. And I think for research and how radiation affects these creatures and how that can then be applied to, you know, studying their genome and their biology, I think that's a built-in kind of safeguard against humans that could potentially, you know, if it's only these researchers and stuff. But then again, they say they're talking to cancer companies and big pharmaceutical companies. You could then start seeing real encroachment, you know, and just, you know, dissecting the hell out of these animals. But if the intention is right, which it seems like it is, and it doesn't go off the rails, then I think it could be a good thing. But I don't know. I leave it to humans to screw it up. But what do you think, Matt?
I just love the idea of being resistant to cancer. And if that means long period of minor exposure to radiation for everyone in my family for the next 200 years, then maybe let's go for it. But I would say probably not.
Doesn't it remind you guys a little bit of like a vaccine or an antidote, where it's like the thing that gives you the disease is also the thing in small amounts that can cure you of it, or that can condition your body against it?
Yeah.
Again, I'm not a scientist in this respect, in any respect, but it does kind of remind me of that, you know, or like the idea of drinking a little bit of snake venom, you know, to steel yourself against a particular type of snake bite.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, but last thing, did you guys see the Michael Cera skin cream commercial that was broadcast in the Super Bowl? It's so good. My favorite part is there's like a unicorn dolphin narwhal or something, and he's like singing beautiful mystical songs to it. I love telling our story. Exactly. Yes, he whispers it to the cream. And then he's like climbing a mountain, like a cliffside, and he reaches into his little bag of chalk, and it's just the cream, and he wipes it on the side of the mountain. I just love that, you know, I'm all about celebrities doing interesting actors and artists doing weird stuff like that and getting paid so that they can make whatever weird passion projects they want to. I think that's pretty cool. I'm all about it.
Do you see who directed that commercial?
Is it somebody interesting?
Tim and Eric.
Oh, I thought it was going to be
beautiful. I had no idea. Good for them, man. Get that Super Bowl money. And last thing, did you see Ye's $7 million Super Bowl ad that he shot on his phone for $0?
No.
Yeah.
Is it about his rampant anti-Semitism?
He doesn't mention it directly, but he does say that he's got some shoes for sale. if anyone's interested, he goes, you know, go to whatever website that is. I'm not going to give it air here, but
I've got a warehouse in Oakland.
Basically, yeah. Yeah, that guy sucks. I don't know if you guys know the Anthony Fantano, the YouTube record review guy that calls The Needle Drop. Very, very popular, influential music critic. He called Kanye's new record Vultures unreviewable because of all of the issues around him as an individual, where you can't really review his art without taking any of his stuff into consideration, and the fact that he's basically, now that he's finally gone too far with all of this stuff, whether or not it was real or an Andy Kaufman-esque stunt, irrelevant at this point, because now he's just trying to own it and acting like he meant it all along and that he was being canceled and he's a victim. I just think it's comical, and the guy just needs to go away for a while.
No opinion, really.
Fair. No need to have one. Fantano doesn't. Well, he did. He gave a 7-minute little speech about it, and I thought he had some good points. But, guys, what do you say we take a quick break, hear a word from our sponsor, and then come back with some more strange news?
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a Gaginianaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
And we've returned. Gentlemen, we are traveling to Charlotte, North Carolina today for this story, and we're going to meet a group called The Hands Law Firm. They're in Charlotte, North Carolina, and I'm going to go ahead and stop right now because I have to get this out. When I hear hands lawyers, like The Hands Law Firm, do you guys think of anything? I have a very specific picture in my mind.
I got to tell you, I think of the hand from Marvel comic books. I also think of You're in Good Hands with Allstate. What are you? Hand reaching out, Matt
Jack
is doing.
Jack Kelly.
Oh, his hands are.
Would it be okay if you put your hands on top,
on
of,
top
mine,
of mine,
like they're my hands?
I don't know. Sunny in Philadelphia.
Oh, gotcha.
Legendary.
For some reason, I picture the weird stalker movie, The Hand That Rocks the Cradle from the 90s.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, nothing to do with lawyer, just about psychos, really. So I don't know.
Jack Kelly, fascinating character.
Yeah.
So Matt, it sounds like it took you a second off that initial reaction to get to this story, because these are not like sketchy, touchy-feely lawyers.
This is actually a fantastic law firm that I can't say anything bad about. They're amazing. The Hands Law Firm in Charlotte, North Carolina. But I had to do a shout out to Andrew Friedman, who's the actor who portrays Jack Kelly first, because that's just what came into my mind.
Absolute legend.
So this law firm, and specifically an attorney who is, I don't know if this person's a partner there or just an attorney there. I couldn't ascertain that from their website. But one of the attorneys, Charles W. Chuck Hands III Esquire, which is so close, right?
There's stuff you should know, right?
No, so close. It sounds like a joke name for Chuck.
Holy cow.
Okay, wait. Chuck is in air quotes there.
Yes.
That's the familial term his friends give him. His last name is Hands, plural. Is that correct?
Charles Hands III.
Okay.
Yeah, wow. Esquire. This is an attorney who works there. So two shout outs. One to the
Esquire,
law firm,
by the way,
it's
like a professional little addendum, right? Isn't that usually what the official version of what Esquire is?
It's an honorific that can go like... I guess you could call it a courtesy title. It works differently in the U.S. versus in the United Kingdom.
So Charles, known as Charlie to his friends, not Chuck. I put the Chuck in there because of the Charles W., which is real.
Yeah. Is there a Charles Charlie rule? Brookie rule?
That's Chuck. I'm sure he has opinions.
Sorry, everybody. We're going to get to the story now. All right. The Hands Law Firm in Charlotte, North Carolina received recently an application from a homeowner to refinance their mortgage, just like they had countless times in the past. This application came from a Mr. Samuel Helmick, who happens to own a home in the Highland Creek area, which is northeast of the city, just outside their like perimeter highway. Most big cities have a perimeter highway that kind of goes around the outside. This is right in the northeast area of that perimeter. This application was for a, quote, cash out refinance. This is a type of loan where a homeowner borrows additional money on top of that big mortgage loan that they've got. They take it from usually the same bank as their mortgage lender, sometimes from a secondary bank. But either way, it's on top of that mortgage, and it's based on the present value of the home versus how much that homeowner owes on that big old mortgage loan, right?
Okay, so the discrepancy there, the margin between the two numbers.
Yeah, it's pretty easy. Like, if let's say you've got $500,000 house, you've paid $100,000 off on that house. You can borrow from that $100,000 in what's called equity.
Yeah.
So that's what this is. The homeowner would get cash, and then extra money would be put into that mortgage loan, which means like a monthly payment would get higher.
It is a home equity loan, basically, right?
It is. It's a home equity loan. Mm-hmm. But it's specifically a cash out refinance. So you would get a huge lump sum of money.
I got it. Hey, Matt, what could go wrong?
Okay, well, let's see. Let's find out. When the Hands Law Firm got this application, it looked pretty good. It included all of Samuel's identifying information, including his driver's license with the photo, his tax return from the previous year, all of his banking information for where the money would get transferred to. But there was something that was a little off. According to this application, Samuel had already paid off his mortgage in full. So the law firm was trying to ascertain why are you trying to refinance your home when you've already paid off your mortgage?
But you could do that. Like, you could leverage that as an asset and get a line of credit against your asset, right?
You can, but generally you wouldn't, as this application was attempting to, get all of the cash, all of your home's worth out in a refinancing. In this case, it would have been around $450,000 in cash that would have been taken out of, you know, the value of the home, the equity, and then the homeowner would have had to make $3,000 monthly payments over the course of the next, you know,
it's like starting at square one. No, it's like literally having you're back to zero with your mortgage, mm-hmm. right?
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Why would you do that, right? Rather than, as a homeowner, sell your home, right? Or rent it out.
Renting, selling, the only other answer would be if you were active in investing and you had a surefire thing that could beat the return rate, which is still very dodgy. That's the casino. Yeah.
I don't think you would do that at the full price. You might do half the worth of your home or something. You know, just it seems the law firm saw it as a big red flag. They're like, this seems weird. So they decided, hey, we should discuss this with Samuel before we move forward because we've got the application. All we have to do is rubber stamp it and this thing's gone. Right. Mm-hmm. All that money gets taken out or the bank loans all of that money by putting it into the account that was provided. And Samuel now has big old payments he's got to make. So the law firm attempted to hold a Zoom meeting with Samuel, which he didn't show up to. They thought, man, that's weird. This is such a big money move. You'd think this guy would be more engaged. OK, so our hero, Charles W. Charlie Hands the Third Esquire, took matters into his own hands and he drove through Charlotte traffic all the way up there to Samuel's front door. He knocked on it and he met Samuel in person. Ooh. And here is a quote from Charles. Quote, "The face of the homeowner matched the face that we had on the driver's license that was sent to us online. But the homeowner had no idea who we were and didn't know anything about a refinance with us at all."
I don't love it.
Yes. And when Samuel was reached out to by WSOC-TV, Action 9 News, there's a reporter there named Jason. He reached out to the homeowner, and the homeowner was just like, nope, not this home. No thanks. Basically, and again, in the opinion that I think many of us would have, once a mortgage has been paid off, you're good to go. Big moves don't exist anymore. We're smooth sailing from here.
Again, you can use that asset to leverage and to get credit. And also your credit's spectacular if you paid off a home of that, you know, an investment of that amount of capital.
Also bad faith actors successfully count on people to make that assumption that things are done when things haven't ended, right?
Right. Mm. Patience goes a long way when you've got bad intentions. So this right here, guys, this is a pretty simple story just to show this kind of thing is going to be happening more and more. You think of all those hacks we've talked about where like super sensitive information has been leaked, right? From pretty much everybody's.
Sure.
This kind of thing, like getting a hold of a copy of a driver's license or a copy of a tax return with how many of us do our taxes online now?
Yeah.
With all these
security number, whatever it might be.
Well, and they're sharing all of that information with all these other third parties, right? That we've talked about last year. Mm-hmm. It's so dangerous. So what the heck can we do? We've talked about it a couple of times of things that we can do to protect ourselves. And this is also coming from WSOC-TV. One of the main things you can do is freeze your credit. It's fairly easy to do. You just tell everybody who's involved with your credit that you're not going to be making any big moves until you let them know. And then you can unfreeze your credit and make a move. But other than that, Nobody can touch, like, take a loan out in your name or anything like that.
It's like a bigger picture version of, like, putting a hold on your debit card or something if there's suspicious activity.
Yeah. Yes. It should also be your default position because the credit system, at least here in the United States, is obtuse and difficult to navigate by design. So it's kind of like trigger discipline. If you're not going to pull the trigger, you don't put your finger on the trigger ever at all. And so you should always have your credit frozen if possible, and then go and unfreeze it. Because if you really need, to your point, Matt, if you really need to make that move, then you're already going to be on the phone. You're already going to have a series of boring conversations. So just make a couple more phone calls. That's the only difference. And it can save you a lot of trouble.
It just becomes step one now, and it's pretty easy. And if you have something like LifeLock with Norton, it's literally a button you can push, which is pretty crazy. Mm-hmm. We have been sponsored by them in the past. I don't know if we're sponsored by them right now, but we've gotten to use that. I'm just using it as an example here. We are not currently sponsored by them. Okay, so the other thing, guys, and I'm super guilty of this, getting junk mail. What you think is junk mail, and then either shredding it or tearing it up and throwing it in the trash.
I almost missed jury summons because it's just on a tiny little postcard thing that's mixed in with a whole bunch of other stuff that just looks like spam mail, you know?
Yes.
Do you guys keep a P.O. box or do you use your actual domicile address?
I use my actual, but I generally just ignore paper mail. Like, bad. I got to do better because... You know, and it's so annoying because there's all these companies that print things to make it look like important mail. So you get desensitized to it. It's like, oh, nice try. You know, the government.
Yeah. Your name or current resident.
Yeah.
Yeah. I get a lot of weirdly specific correspondence with all sorts of stuff. I open all of it. You know, we read every piece of mail we get. That's a great point, Matt. That's what you kind of have to do.
That's exactly the advice that we are giving to you here. And that's what Jason said on his article there. Open everything. It doesn't matter. Just open it. Take a look at it. If your name is on there, look at it. Even if you are like 90% sure this is crap.
Yeah.
Just give it a quick peruse.
Especially if it's slightly misspelled, by the way, just like a low key good side of the unethical life hack thing. If you get an email you get a piece of correspondence that is to like Bat Medrick or whatever, you need to open that one first.
But also it's like, I think we're so used to like everything being a call or a text or an email. They're old school institutions that don't do that at all. They only correspond via the U.S. mail. So if you're not looking for that or you're not paying attention, you could miss that stuff easily. I was realized that I wasn't covered by insurance for 2 entire months for my home because for whatever reason, something happened and my policy was canceled because I did not realize I had to renew it. And they gave me that correspondence via the U.S. mail and no call, no text, no email, nothing. So I was, if that's something that happened during those 2 months, I would have been in big trouble.
You know, part of the reason for that, by the way, the reticence to engage in new technology, like part of the reason some of these institutions cling toward the USPS specifically is that messing with Postal Service correspondence is a very serious crime. And it actually doesn't apply the same way in things like email or even private carriers like your local UPS or FedEx. So, dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun.
Did you guys know that it's there is a separate rate in the U.S. mail for media mail, like sending like, you know, a tape or a CD or whatever, and that if they open it and they find out that you've written a correspondence in there, they'll charge you extra postage. This is irrelevant, but I just found that out, and I think that's so interesting.
Don't be doing that.
Don't be doing that.
Just send the music.
Just send the music, man. Does that count for cute little notes in your mixtape, though? I got to wonder.
Ooh, I don't know. I don't know. Gray area, I would say.
Agreed. Mm.
Speak to my attorney, Jack Kelly.
Mr. Hands?
There's not much else to say here besides keep an eye on that kind of stuff because it's going to be happening more. Thank you to the Hands Law Firm and Charles W. Charlie Hands and David W. Hands.
Bro, do you think that their like tagline is "You're in good hands"?
Oh, come on! It's good. If it's not,
it's a missed opportunity. Come on,
you guys, come on, come on! It's really cool. It's David and Charles hands doing their thing. All right, we'll be right back with more strange news.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
And we've returned, codenamed Doc. Could I get something like a gunshot? Perfect. Could I get something like an air horn? Yeah! Guys, a new cryptid just dropped, and it's one of the strangest ones that we have encountered. I hit you guys up over a group chat when I had a different phone, and I was startled to find that the newest, strangest life form discovered by the human species is with us on the show now. And folks, there is a higher than 50% chance it's with you as you listen.
Talking about spooky ghosts?
Is it a cryptid?
Possession?
This is, well, it was a cryptid. It was suspected. Let's introduce everybody to the obelisk. Ooh. All right, how conspiratorial. So, Stanford University researchers recently discovered, through some very smart boffin exercises, they recently discovered that there is a life form that humans were not aware of that exists largely inside human mouths and guts in your microbiome. And we all know that science continues to sort of wrestle with the implications of the microbiome in the human intestine today. Like, we don't understand how it can affect things, but it can affect behavior. It can affect, you know, the immune system. It can even affect physiology. It may have epigenetic consequences. So these folks went even further into this. They wrote a great article, or they wrote a great study that's in what we call preprint, meaning it hasn't been peer reviewed yet. But what they found is that there are tiny, tiny, tiny bits of RNA collections that are even smaller than viruses. They're called viroids. Now, if we step back for a second and stay on viruses, as we've discussed in previous episodes, viruses are on the very edge of what humans consider an active life form, right? Because viruses cannot reproduce without a host. They don't obviously seem to have like dreams or ideology or anything, but they can replicate. Viroids are a step smaller than that. I had never heard of viroids before. Had you guys ever heard of this?
No. No. And the image on one of the links that you sent, Ben, from Popular Mechanics, the thing looks like a black hole in your body.
Wait, is that the thing, though? It doesn't say.
I think that's
say.
The thing. Is it? I mean, it's, I don't know. It looks like an obelisk to me.
But, no, it looks like a dark spot. I was looking at the other objects in here that look like obelisks to me.
Maybe I'm wrong. Sorry.
I just don't know. Good.
I like the idea of a black hole in your body.
Yeah, they don't quite have it. Hey, we've got to be the black holes we want to see in the world, right? So this research out of Stanford University found that this biological entity is probably the closest to a viroid. But if a virus is on one side of a spectrum and a viroid is on the other, these things are sort of a missing link. And they organize into strands of RNA, but they don't have a protein coat that would protect them the way that other larger actual life forms do. And it gets even weirder. These researchers, just from doing some forensic database searching, which again, they did in a brilliant way, they found that there are already almost 30,000 distinct types of this life form that they can identify in humans alone. So we don't know how much is in other mammals, perhaps. We don't know what the effects of these things are. We don't know how long they've been in humans, probably quite a while. And we don't know what they're doing.
This is so weird.
Right?
Like, just how did we just now find these?
Right.
We've been looking through microscopes for a long time, and crazy powerful microscopes. We're editing stuff on the nanoscale and building structures on the nanoscale. And these things have just been like, just hanging
just blooping around in there.
Yeah. Yeah. Just hanging. So let's give a shout out to the authors. There are quite a few people who wrote this. Ivan N. Zeludev, Robert C. Edgar, Maria Jose Lopez Galeano, Marcos de la Pena, Artem Babian, Ami S. Bhatt, Andrew Z. Fire. And I saved Andrew's name for the end because
need
I think
some more air horns for that.
Z.
Baby.
Fire. Yeah, yeah, air horns. Let's do it. So what they did is they looked into these massive data sets of microbiome studies in human beings. And they said 7% of the microbiome studies from the, or samples from the human gut had this weird, inexplicable thing. 50% of the data sets, again, from around the world, ethnicity, demographic notwithstanding, 50% had these obelisks in them, which means that everybody listening now, I don't want to say infected, I don't want to scare people, but they're in you, man. The calls come in from inside the house. And to your question, Matt, the reason these seem to have been overlooked for so long, even with the skyrocketing interest in the human microbiome, it's because these obelisks are so dissimilar to anything that has been described as a life form in the history of human science. I wish that we had at this point some more data on what the implications or the effects could be. You know, we know there's good gut microbes. We know there are bad gut microbes. We don't know about the obelisk. They're like a new character in Act 3. We know that they're like a virus always needs a host, and these viroid-like things may be similar. We know that they are often going to be hosted by different types of bacteria. One in particular, an ingredient in dental plaque called Streptococcus sanguinis. So brush your teeth if you don't want the obelisk.
It's like blood bacteria. Ben, this is so, it's not that I'm feeling skeptical about this because I'm looking at all the sources you've sent and everything looks legit. Everything looks like it's real. But one of the stories for last week that I was thinking about maybe talking about was a story from The Guardian titled, "The situation has become appalling. Fake scientific papers push research credibility to crisis point." And it was all about how last year there were over 10,000 major retractions in huge scientific journals.
That's correct. Yeah.
Where there was a, like, they had to just completely remove papers that were published in these journals because they were fraudulent in one way or another. Right. Mm-hmm. Which is like, I'm not saying this has anything to do with that. What I mean is I've got this lens that has been over my eyes for the past like week or so thinking about this stuff. And this new thing is so mind blowing that my brain is kind of just going, which is it?
Isn't it? Yeah. Isn't it? Oh gosh. I read a story with this guy too. He needs a shout out. Sholto David, an unemployed scientist who has been instrumental in poring over research and scientific papers. And he's one of the folks who is leading the charge on sussing out errors in academic journals. Everybody, please do check out our episode previously on some of the stuff they don't want you to know about how the academic journal sausage gets made. We promise you it's weird. But I see what you're saying, Matt. There's this dissonance sometimes between the actual science that is done, the way it is interpreted, and the way that it is reported in popular media. We also are well aware that there is an at-time conspiratorial hierarchy over the existence of scientific journals. I am hoping that we can return to this story in the future and figure out what the obelisks mean for the human experiment. Do they mean that, like, is it some sort of evolutionary vestige that has no real relevance, no harm or no benefit to humans? Is it something that we don't understand yet that may be affecting behavior or growth or reproduction in some way? What happens when you make out with people? Do you trade
like mono? No, I got to say, Ben, I really appreciate you couching this in terms of a cryptid, because we never really think about cryptids being like undiscovered microbes or like things in our bodies. But, it, you know, let's give credit where credit is due. They are biological beings, so they should be considered on the table for cryptid conversation. So well done, sir.
Oh, thank you, sir. What if they're, I mean, that's the other thing. The safe answer is, what if they're just sort of hitching a ride in the biological credits of what makes your life yours if you're human? You know what I mean? How sometimes you're watching the credits of a very long film and someone just slides in with one credit. What if that's the obelisk? What if they're just running the time out to stay as part of the franchise? I don't know, but we do have a lot to learn about, I don't know, about the human question. It seems like the more humans learn about the very, very big things and the very, very small things, the more questions proliferate. Like, what would, if we gamed this out, if we just played, you know, sort of conspiracy cinematic universe here, what would be the coolest implication of an undiscovered life form in the human body? What would be like the coolest thing? A superpower, maybe? I don't know.
Well, I mean, you know, we recently did a video, which you can find, I believe, on Instagram also YouTube Shorts, about fungus, space fungus, right? And the idea of fungi being alien beings that are really good at hitching rides, you know, out into space. And they're also like uniquely suited to exist out there. So this to me is part of that same kind of a conversation. I don't know. It's very interesting stuff.
Matt, what do you have? What kind of superpower would you want to discover with an obelisk population?
Let's see. It's got minor amounts of genetic information. Mm-hmm. Certain obelisks can transfer rapid mutations into genetic material. So one of them would allow me to grow actual wings back here. Yeah. Sure. Into it. Thinking, I don't know. Let's go full owl style wings with some big old feathers. Yep. That's what I want.
Tight.
Massive talons, perhaps.
No. I don't want the talons. Still want the grabby hands.
Okay. Gotta keep the thumbs. Classic.
Owls are freaky, dude. The way they turn their heads 360 degrees, like Exorcist style.
They're scary, amazing.
Scary guys. Beautiful. Oh, also, Matt, Your owl-style wings would allow you to fly soundlessly.
If your bones are also hollow.
Ah, well.
Does that too?
Does that too? Okay.
Yeah. Actually, no.
Called it.
Let's change it up. Let's do super dense bones, dragon wings.
Yeah. Go for it. No, add the fire in too. It's guacamole at the Chipotle of superpowers. Yeah. I am good friends with a couple of owls in my U.S. neighborhood here.
We have a neighborhood owl as well, Ben.
Yeah. Hey, might be the same one. They get around, you know.
Soundlessly.
Right. They've sacrificed agility for stealth, which happens, you know. Aircraft are slowly learning to imitate things that birds invented or discovered or evolved years and years ago. I do think we are on the verge of a fascinating exploration here. Now, to be clear, if you have types of obelisk life forms or viroids in your mouth or your gut right now, they're probably not a forever gift. The Stanford Boffins currently believe that you could harbor a single type of obelisk for maybe around a year. So we don't know how they transmit. We don't know where they've come from or where they're going, but we do know they're real. And that is a strange discovery. There's one more thing I'd like to set up if we have time before we end today. Is that okay, guys? It's a true crime story.
Yeah, please.
So just as we were coming in to record this evening, we read some frankly disturbing news. A woman named Victoria Hill in Connecticut found out that she purchased a DNA testing kit from 23andMe, and she found out that she had many more siblings than she had ever thought. She has around 22 and maybe more. And that's because she is a victim of what is now being called fertility fraud. Remember when we did the story about that guy who was like super into donating his sperm everywhere?
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it seems like there's another case of this. Hill found out that her biological father was not the guy she grew up with, but it was the fertility doctor who had been helping her mother to conceive. Further, she found that one of her newly discovered siblings was her former high school boyfriend.
Okay.
Yay.
Heavy.
Yeah. There's that podcast. I can't remember. Sick maybe is the name of the podcast. It's about a fertility doctor that was doing all that kind of stuff. And there's so many right now where it's like fertility doctors be doing stuff.
Yeah, and apparently it's another problem of they do be doing stuff. Yes,
I'm sorry. That was to crack myself up. I'm so sorry, guys.
We do see though that it is another case of a flag I've been waving for years, which is legislation not catching up with technology. There aren't really comprehensive laws against this kind of pretty serious crime with clear intergenerational consequences. I don't think lawmakers are very clear yet on how to legislate on it, but a CNN investigation found that the majority of U.S. states do not have laws against what we would call fertility fraud. And if you want some kind of justice, some kind of recourse, the doctors or bad faith actors that you're accusing, they have a huge advantage in court, and it's very difficult to get them to even stop practicing, much less face criminal consequences. So if you'd like to read more about this, check out the excellent work by CNN, which is ongoing now. The journalist Rob Kuznia, Allison Gordon, Nellie Black, and Kyung La. This is breaking news. The Valentine's Day timing is unfortunate. And with that, thank you, as always, so much for tuning in this evening, fellow conspiracy realists. We hope this finds you well. We hope this finds you healthy. We hope you have made friends with the strange cryptids in your guts.
Or a neighborhood owl, you know, for that matter.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Let us know what you think about any and all of these tales. We try to be easy to find online.
Correct. You can find us at the handle Conspiracy Stuff, where we exist on Facebook, in our Facebook group,
here's where it gets crazy. We are also that handle on X, FKA Twitter, and YouTube, where you can find all sorts of fun video content every single week. We are Conspiracy Stuff Show, however, on Instagram and TikTok. Want to get in touch with us another way? Well, you can do that too.
That's true. If you don't sip the social meads, fellow conspiracy realists, never fear. You can call us directly on a telephonic device. Our number is 1-833-STDWYTK. You'll hear a hopefully familiar voice and then a beep like so. Beep. That means you'll have 3 minutes. Those 3 minutes are yours, folks. Go nuts. Go ham. All we ask is that you give us your nickname, a street name you've always wanted. Give us permission to use your name and or message on the air. And if none of that quite bags your badgers, there is an absolutely fantastic way to reach us 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. All you have to do is drop us a line at our good old-fashioned email address where we are.
Conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.